Mission. You guys on high spot, we'll be back in.
Welcome to Roll Call, a 126th Air Refueling Wing podcast of the Illinois Air National Guard here at Scott Air Force Base. I'll be your host today. I'm Senior Airman Troy Barnes. It's nice to meet you. We'll be talking about all things mobility, mission readiness, leadership, legacy, and I'm excited to say I think we have the perfect guest for all of that. The AMC commander himself, General Mike Minahan. Before we dive in, though, we wanted to take a second to recognize those from our wing that are deployed right now. We hope you're watching, we hope you're listening, and we hope you get back safe.
Hello, DAP riders. The 2024 riding season is upon us. Sadly, we lost 22 airmen to motorcycle accidents and 194 total motorcycle mishaps last year. Most of these mishaps could have been prevented. What could we have done better? Most of our mishaps and deaths were a result of excessive speed, intoxication, not wearing PPE, and a lack of training and practicing. Some of our riders even received line of duty determinations, losing benefits for themselves and their families. What can you do to help protect yourself, your family, and your mission readiness? Practice. Your skills are your number one defense on the road. Wear your PPE. Follow DAF regulations. Attend DAF rider training, even if you're a seasoned rider. Slow down. And finally, don't drink and ride. It's just not worth the risk. And as always, keep it shiny side up.
Today is a very special episode for a few reasons. But before I dive in, I did want to give a few shout outs to people that made this possible. I couldn't do this by myself. The man behind the camera who set this production up, Staff Sergeant Aaron Rodriguez, I consider a good friend. He's a wizard, honestly. And then Master Sergeant Jason Esker, he came to our guest and put the right words in the right ears to get this going. And then our superintendent at the Public Affairs Shop, Master Sergeant Brian Ellison. This whole podcast wouldn't be possible without him, and he kind of holds the fort down over there. So I wanted to get that out of the way, but we are live. We're not live, but we're at the AMC headquarters, joined with none other than the AMC Air Mobility Command Commander, General Mike Minahan. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Troy. It's a pleasure to be here. Welcome to the family.
Thank you.
Here at AMC, and it's an honor to do this with you.
I appreciate those words, and I feel the same way. Your team's been super helpful.
They're amazing.
Making me feel comfortable because I feel like I'm interviewing the president right now. The lights are kind of blinding me, but I want to jump right in. I'm going to ask you the hardest question first.
Certainly.
About your mobility manifesto. You define that as an untethered thought on the current state of affairs, and you emphasize this importance to be more lethal, more ready than we ever have been. And I want to provide some context first, because it took me a while to understand what really you were saying. But in the past century, I mean, we've seen horrific acts against humanity. We've seen relentless pursuits of power by our enemies. Empires have fallen very recently. So why now, in this modern era, should we be more focused than ever?
Well, when I came into this job, I was hired because of my experience in the Pacific. So I've got two tours in Korea at United States Forces Korea. I've got two tours at Indo-PACOM. I've got a tour at PACAF. Yeah, so I've got about almost a decade of time in the Pacific. Mm-hmm. When General Brown hired me to be the Air Mobility Command commander, he said, go faster. It wasn't a comment on any of my predecessors, more of a comment on the current environment and what he wanted to accomplish with his Accelerate, Change, or Lose document. Mm-hmm. And so with that kind of as an initial setting of why I'm here, I mean, I do know how to go fast. I've got experience with the pacing challenge as identified by our national defense strategy. Mm-hmm. And I overlaid my experience in the Pacific with, you know, the fact that I'm now the commander of Air Mobility Command. 110,000 amazing total force airmen active duty guard reserve, our civilians. We can never forget our family members. Just an incredible team each and every day, flying about 1,100 aircraft with an enormous responsibility to the joint team. Mm-hmm. You know, we like to say that we are the maneuver. We are the most relied upon force in the history of warfare. Mm-hmm. I don't say that to be arrogant. I don't say that seeking sympathy. But everybody else's success depends upon this amazing team's ability to get things done very quickly. Mm-hmm. So we identified some problem statements, very early. And the first problem statement was, we're not ready to fight and win inside the first island chain. And the second one was, we're not as ready, integrated, or agile as we should be. So with those two framing problem statements, we really tried to identify an analytical approach on how we move forward to strengthen our position. Mm-hmm. And the first was, and the one I'll hit all three, you know, you can either make the most value of the things you already have, and you can adjust like your tactics, your techniques, and your procedures. You can go out and get things that you don't have that already exist. So go get value that exists that you simply don't have. And then the third would be ask American industry to develop technology that you need that doesn't exist that could make your job better. Mm-hmm. So solely focusing on making the best use in this conversation with what we have. Mm-hmm. And so we did. We adjusted tactics, techniques, and procedures. You see examples of that out in the field today. You probably mm-hmm. saw that KC-46 that flew around the world. We didn't do that mm-hmm. to set a record. We did that because those are the type of capabilities that we'll need to do in any near-peer fight mm-hmm. that we hope doesn't happen. But if it does, we want to be ready for it. Mm-hmm. So the ability to fly very long distances, the abilities to fly for 44 hours, 45 hours, to be able to hit precise locations and time and space and mm-hmm. do refueling for others and also to be refueled. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the skill set that the majority of the force is going to need. Mm-hmm. So what the manifesto, the intent of the manifesto was to say very strongly at the very beginning of my tenure, hey, we've got some work to do with this force mm-hmm. and a lot of the things that we use. Mm-hmm. So your unit is an exceptional unit. It's flying an airplane that was made in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's flying an airplane that my grandfather flew.
My next question will go into that a little bit.
But I think we can do better. Mm-hmm. I think we can do better as a mobility force. I think we can do better for the joint force than fly mm-hmm. the second tanker that this country has ever built. So, you know, we have developed fighter aircraft and bomber aircraft that we talk about in terms of fifth gen and sixth gen, mm-hmm. yet we're still operating the second generation of tanker
that this country has ever built. And it's ironic because, I mean, it's not a secret that, you know, without a tanker, without that gas, you know, the whole fleet might as well be parked.
You got it exactly right. So your challenge will be in a force package is that, you know, your challenge is that you have to deal with second generation mixing with fifth and sixth generation, mm-hmm. and everything is going to be challenged by the lowest one of those. So we can do better, and I'm convinced we can do better. That's an example of what the manifesto is trying to get after. Connectivity is another aspect of it. The ground kits is another aspect of it. The air operations center is another aspect of it. But the manifesto was intended to throw down early mm-hmm. and say, we have got to pay attention to the development of the mobility fleet, the mobility kit, mm-hmm. because we have neglected it. And it needs to be paid attention now. And it's not about our success. It's about everybody's success.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And speaking of, you know, the need for that more mission-ready capability with our wing, with the tankers, there's been talk of the KC-46 and the, you know, next-generation air refueling system. Mm-hmm. With these innovations of technology and with technology in general moving as fast as it is, do you see us, the people I know over at our wing, and air crew, do you see them getting closer to the fray or maybe a little further?
Well, I think you cannot have one part of the force that needs to get close to the fray and not have the entire force that needs to get close to the fray. Mm-hmm. So whether you're talking about airlift in terms of our C-17s, our C-130s, our C-5s, mm-hmm. or the tanker force in terms of the KC-46 and the KC-135. Mm-hmm. If the fighter and the kinetic force, the bomber force, is going to have to get close, then we're going to have to go there, especially mm-hmm. in this fight. Mm-hmm. Everybody talks about the tyranny of distance, and that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. But distance exists in the European theater as well. Mm-hmm. But it's really about the tyranny of distance when you overlay the tyranny of water. There's not a whole lot of options out right. there. Just like there is in Europe, you know, there's decades and decades of a wonderful NATO alliance, mm-hmm. And decades of interaction, decades of airfields being built and stuff mm-hmm. like that, that simply that infrastructure doesn't exist in the Pacific. So we're going to have to get very comfortable doing very long missions, very long distances away from our bases mm-hmm. to support the force that's going in to do the hard work. So, you know, you can expect in a fight that mm-hmm. the tanker force and the lift force is going to have to get close to support. All of the agility concepts are out there. Mm-hmm. We always talk about ACE in the Air Force, mm-hmm. but there's also agility concepts for the Army called MDTF, you mm-hmm. know, Multi-Domain Task Force. Expeditionary Base operations are what EABU, mm-hmm. Expeditionary Air Base Operations.
Thank you for spelling out these acronyms for me.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of spelling them out. I'm stumbling a little bit.
No, it's helpful.
But, you know, Expeditionary Air Base Operations is what the Marine Corps uses. Mm-hmm. There's a concept for the Navy, you know, maritime operations. And so there, mm-hmm. each of these services is going to require that Air Mobility Command be on point. Mm-hmm. And we have to make every one of them successful. Mm-hmm. So in order to do that, if they're going to be close and in the weapons engagement zone, then we're going to have to be close and at sometimes in the weapons engagement zones. Mm-hmm. We're not going to take crazy, uncalculated risk. We're going to mm-hmm. approach it in a risk-based approach mm-hmm. that understands the risk-benefit analysis. Mm-hmm. But we also are going to have to do things that we're not used to doing. So the decades of time in the CENTCOM AOR, mm-hmm. where you essentially have air supremacy, you have uncontested lines of communication, you have bases, I'm not saying they don't get attacked, but you have bases that are relatively safe from large-scale attacks. That's not going to be the case in the Pacific. We're going to have to get used to a higher level of warfare, mm-hmm. and we're going to have to be successful regardless of what the threat is.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to transition to another topic because, you know, I can only keep up with that so much, just given my limited knowledge of you know, the bigger picture and kind of what goes into all these moving pieces. I mean, you, of course, have seen it all and have that understanding of it. But I wanted to talk about your leadership. I think your approachability is probably your best trait. And rank can be intimidating for a lot of folks, and you have all of them. So what advice can you give to leaders or prospective leaders that would help them mirror that style?
Yeah. Approachability, as a compliment, thank you. You know, I don't wake up and decide to be approachable. I don't wake up and decide, you know, this is the way I'm going to be today. You know, I'm very fortunate that I guess the way I was brought up, you know, kind of in a family that was certainly, you know, with where the foundation was love, respect, hard work, you know, all the things, you know, the American ideals, if you will. You know, I got a full, wonderful dose of that in the 18 years I was at home. So, you know, any trait that I have is not attributable to me. It's to my parents and my siblings and my grandparents and just the extended family. I extend that to the family I'm surrounded by now, which is the Air Mobility Command family. But approach, I just try to be me. You know, I'm just me. And I am naturally curious about people. I am naturally drawn to energy of others. I'm the guy that likes to talk and have an interaction. I don't like to type. I tell everybody I'm not a good pen pal. I'd rather talk than type. And, you know, I'll always drive it to a situation where I can look somebody in the eye and have a connection with. And, you know, I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I was at Air University. I gave 2 one-hour speeches. I gave 4 one-hour talks in a different environment. And then I had the opportunity to go to a wonderful ROTC detachment up at Tuskegee University and have interaction with the cadre and the staff there. And those things really fill my soul and give me a lot of energy. I believe that regardless of the rank, that we should be having real conversations, and we shouldn't let rank get in the way of the discussion that really needs to happen. So I've been, you know, lucky in my career also to be surrounded by wonderful NCOs and airmen and officers, commanders around me, above me, beside me, that have trusted me enough to tell me what I needed to hear, not what I wanted to hear. So, you know, and I've learned some people from people that were better than me at this. And I've also been in situations where I thought those around me could do better. So, you know, 34 years into this, I'm still far from perfect, but I'm well mature in a journey that has allowed me to take chances with styles, to take chances with the way I interact, to take chances with the way I write, to take chances with the way I lead. And to have situations where I could have done better and have people point out how I could have done better. And then I internalize those and move forward and keep swinging. I had a great ops officer when I was a captain scheduler who later became my commander. His name is Mark Fritchie. He's an amazing American. And I never once got anything through him on the first time. Not once did I get anything through him on the first time. But he appropriately roughed me up when I needed it. He pointed out the ways that I could improve, and then he always took me aside at the end and said, and this is how you can do better, and you need to dig in and swing away again. Mm-hmm. I mean, he propped me up for the next evolution to stand in the box and swing away. So I'm just lucky. Long way to say I'm a lucky man.
I gotcha. Yeah, I mean, when you choose compassion before anything else, when you make that decision every day that – you know, you're going to have positive thoughts and you're going to make a difference.
Yep.
I mean, I believe it, and I've seen it this past month, that it really can change your entire outlook when you're doing things for the right reasons.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about genuineness. We talk about making yourself vulnerable. And, if you looked at some of the old regs in the Air Force, there's this old regulation written in 1948, Air Force Manual 3515. It's wonderful. If you ever have a chance to read through it, it talks about humanness, you know, just the humanity. But, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, America gives us her blood and treasure. I mean, America gives us her sons and daughters, and that is an enormous responsibility. Mm-hmm. What a shame it would be if we let barriers inappropriately stop us from doing the right things and having the right conversations and taking the right actions.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree.
We have an obligation in our oaths. Both of us take an oath. They're a little bit different, but they essentially say the same thing, you know, which is we have an obligation to do our job. We have an obligation to certainly support and defend the Constitution of the United States. So, you know, nobody's going to, you know, if we have negative outcomes and people, and there's a barrier in between us doing, you know, what we should do and what we did, then we need to remove those barriers, and we need to make sure that we are getting after being good stewards of the blood and treasure, being good stewards of the oaths we took, and getting after the mission and taking care of airmen, taking care of their families. And then, you know, when all that happens, then all the good stuff happens too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I couldn't be more thankful for you using your power, or I suppose your influence, to send the right message and sort of start that conversation of taking care of each other,
yep,
taking care of our airmen, because what's worse for morale than nobody feels special or seen or understood, and,
right,
you know, they're just cast to the side.
Right.
So I think you are fostering and contribute to a very healthy culture in the military, because you can, on one hand, have that conversation about people and compassion, but also when it comes to the mission and when we are gearing up for the next fight, you're all business and everybody sees that.
You're right. Well, you alluded to it when you transitioned into this question. You talked about, you know, that my, you know, that I'm up here and that you didn't, you know, you may not fully comprehend. You know, it's important that we all understand what's at stake, and I think we do. But it's also important that everybody knows that the most critical thing that an airman can do is their job very well. I mean, that is the most important part. We also don't need to overthink this. I don't expect every airman to walk through the intricacies of the strategy and you know, the higher level stuff, okay? Right. But we all, every one of us at every level needs to say, we are going to do our job and we're going to do it well and then actually be able to do that. So it doesn't matter what your role is. So it doesn't matter if you're a flyer, a fixer, or a supporter. It doesn't matter what group you're in. It doesn't matter what squadron in. It doesn't even matter how close you are to the cockpit. Your value to the mission is not proportional to your proximity to the cockpit, which means that it takes all of us to get this done. This is a team sport. And, you know, whether you understand how your actions affect the big picture or not, they do. And so, there is one critical factor here. It's just do your job well. If everybody does that, then it'll unleash the power and the awesomeness that is the United States Air Force and the Joint Force as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I think really that's all the questions I wanted to ask you. Unless there was something else you wanted to leave me with or leave my team with, or maybe the 126.
Certainly.
Just before we go.
Well, let's talk about the 126. So sure. I had a wonderful flight on my birthday with the 126. It was amazing. What a treat for me. I'd never flown in a KC-135 before. And, it was amazing. It's an amazing team. And then it was a mission that it was just an honor to be a part of. So we got to fly. Go ahead.
I saw you in a picture of you in the boom pod. Were you actually refueling a plane?
Did you just do fun things like that? No, they looked at me and not for one second that they considered that I have the skill to do that.
It looked like you were messing with the controls. Yeah, wow.
Without a plane behind us, they let me mess with the controls a little bit. But. But it was a comment on the total force. You know, it was a comment on the whole fly fix support team. It has a special tie to me because my grandfather flew bombing missions in B-26s in Europe with the lineage of the 126. So it goes back to his bombardment group, the We Win or Die patch with the flaming bombs. That was the patch my grandfather wore and flew under in World War II. So to be able to not only celebrate the current team and the current capabilities, to have that on my birthday of all things, right, be a throwback to the lineage of my family was just a walk-off home run. It was the best birthday present I've ever had, and I'll cherish that memory for the rest of my career. Rest of my life, certainly.
Wow, the 126, you guys have a lot to take credit for there. Best birthday gift you've ever had. You mentioned your grandfather. Legacy, I've noticed, is you talk to almost anybody who's in the service, it seems like, you know, their father served, or their uncle, or their grandpa, or all of those. Mm. Was there anybody else besides your grandfather that was in the military?
So I've got quite a long line. My grandfather was a World War II bomber pilot, flew transports in the Korean War. My dad was a career intel officer for 33 years, so three generations of Air Force. The Air Force has not known a day officially since its inception without a Minahan officer in the ranks. But my brother served in the United States Army as an enlisted sergeant. He deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan, and I actually got to spend time with him deployed in 2004 when I was flying C-130s as a squadron commander. I've got two great-grandfathers that served, so there's a fairly robust lineage. But more importantly, it doesn't matter if it's a family tradition like it is for you. It doesn't matter if it's a family tradition like it is for me, or if you're the first in a family that's creating a tradition. It is incredibly inspiring to be around, you know, this team. And had the opportunity to go to basic military training in San Antonio about a year and a half ago and participate in the ceremony that you participated in that welcomes airmen out of basic military training and into the Air Force on the big parade field in front of all the parents. And that was just a treat to see. Everybody in America should have to go to a graduation from basic military training and see the transformation of a citizen to an airman, and for that matter, a soldier, sailor, airman, marine, Coast Guardsman or guardian, to be able to see that transformation, to be able to see the pride that they have in their eyes, that their family has for them, and everybody that loves them. It's just really cool. And I'll tell you, you know, coming out of that, just, you know, we already talked about what fuels my soul. I mean, that just put me in afterburner for months afterwards, and it's really cool. So I applaud everybody that's serving, whether it's a family tradition or they're the first in their family to do it.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Because, I mean, we were all there at one point, right? A little green bean.
Yeah.
Our head still almost bald.
Yeah.
I look back at those moments and I cherish them, but thank God basic training was over.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say one more time, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your chaotic schedule to sit down with me and have this one-on-one conversation. Whether the cameras were here or not, I feel like I got a lot out of this.
Thank you.
I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Is it okay if I have some final words?
Go for it, please.
I just want to express my gratitude. So I'm at the end of my three-year command tour. I'm a month away from being out of the Air Force, you know, after 34 years of service. And I just want to absolutely, to your audience and to you personally and to your teammates, just express my sincere gratitude for the journey that I've been on. So it's an honor to put the uniform of this nation on and suit up for America every day. I've had incredible opportunities, but the best of the opportunities I've had is to be surrounded by the teams that have surrounded me for 34 years. So it didn't matter if it was an all Air Force team or a joint team, but to be surrounded by these wonderful patriots and certainly warriors and airmen and every service has been a real treat. And so I don't know what I'm going to do next. I'm going to turn from commander to head cheerleader, I think is going to be the official role that I have. But, you know, to everybody that's served and is serving, and most importantly to their families, to everybody that loves somebody in uniform, that supports somebody in uniform, I just a tip of the hat and my sharpest, crispest salute to them for what they do each and every day. So thank you.
Wow. Thank you, sir.
In the last month, 12 African partner nations and 11 countries across the Americas worked with the U.S. Air Force to integrate and build upon their capabilities to plan and execute multinational operations. The African Partnership Flight, a biannual force development, educational, and interoperability workshop, helps strengthen U.S. strategic partnerships by sharing ideas to enhance regional cooperation. And the U.S. Southern Command sponsored Panamax 2024, an exercise designed to develop and test participating nations' capabilities to respond as a unified force for a wide variety of mission demands across conventional, space, cyber, and information domains. Medical airmen are being trained in a strategic initiative called MEDIC-X. The U.S. Air Force Medical Service is implementing MEDIC-X to familiarize all medical airmen in providing clinical support to wounded personnel. It ensures airmen are proficient in 52 skills that will be needed in a deployed environment. Some of the skills include oxygen therapy, checking vitals, and assessing pain levels. The initiative also utilizes virtual reality goggles and high-fidelity mannequins to provide realistic scenarios that enhance airmen performance. With the upcoming presidential election, service members and federal employees are encouraged to participate in the political process, but must have an awareness of specific guidelines on acceptable political activities. DoD Directive 1344-10 provides guidance on political activities for service members, while the Hatch Act of 1939 regulates civilian employees on personal political activities. All DoD members must be careful not to conduct political activities in the workplace or use official positions to advocate for political issues. That's your look around the Air Force. I'm Staff Sergeant Milton Hamilton.
You can find all of our links on Linktree at linktree/126ARW. You can watch the podcast on YouTube or listen to it on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you want to see somebody on our podcast, you can email us at 126rollcall@gmail.com. Or maybe you want your camera time. I won't tell anybody. Also, keep in mind reenlistment opportunities and bonuses here at the Wing. You can speak to Master Sergeant Esker about those, but I heard something about a $90,000 bonus. That's crazy. Thanks for listening to Roll Call, a 126th Air Refueling Wing podcast focused on people, mission, and community. I'm Senior Airman Troy Barnes. I had a blast. I'm signing off.
We're good on approach and landing.
500 stable.